Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining the Thursday morning MV Pro Call. Today is February 15th, and today is February 15th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to MotorVitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotorVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. Including one that we did several years ago. I had the guest of two of them joined us from, they were researchers from the Loggerhead Research Facility in Jupiter, Florida, which is related a little bit to the topic we're going to discuss today. They talked about the turtles that came back up on shore in the study they had just done and the amount of microplastics that had been consumed that they found and stuff like that. But before we get to our topic, I'm going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Anybody have anything? Well, that makes it easy because now we have a lot of stuff to talk about in on our topic today, so it gives us a little bit more time to have that discussion today. So we are going to talk about microplastics today, and the idea for this topic started because we talked about the January issue of Consumer Reports. And they did a survey of, they evaluated mostly point of use pitcher type filters, but they had some really excellent information, including some quotes from Eric Yeagy from the Water Quality Association, and it was just a great topic. And interestingly enough, the February issue of Consumer Reports the title page was plastics. So I thought, okay, let's talk microplastics because that has an impact on our industry. When I really delved into the article, I was going to really talk about that article a lot, but the article is still worth reading. And if you guys have seen it or read it, I definitely would. If you haven't seen it or read it, I'd encourage you to take a look at it because it talked a lot about the microplastics issue. But it didn't really focus on the water side of it. It had one little blurb about plastic bottles, plastic water bottles in there, but it really didn't talk about filtration of them or removing them from the water, or it wasn't, the article itself was not directly related to our industry, but microplastics certainly are in a lot of different ways, not only in the way we reduce or remove them from the water, but in the impact that our industry has on the amount of plastics that particularly go into our water supply, into the oceans and stuff like that. So first off, I thought that we would talk a little bit today about what microplastics are. And I really tried when I was researching the call to come up with some reputable sources, because when you do a Google search, just like with anything on the internet, you Google microplastics and the first things that come up are, there are a lot of filter companies, a lot of companies out there that want to sell you stuff. And boy, you can go down a rabbit hole and find just a ton of information about, which filter works best and what one doesn't. And I found one article that was really bashing the heck out of reverse osmosis systems. Talking about how the membranes, the plastic membranes, will put them in, will actually add microplastics to the water, and you've got the plastic housings on the filters, and then the plastic components in the faucets, and of course they wanted to sell the, and it was alkaline water that they wanted to sell, which I didn't understand exactly what they were saying, how you could avoid all that and how that actually filtered out the microplastics. But you've got to really be careful on what you find when you're delving in and doing research. I think that's true with anything, whether it be Google or whatever. So the sources that I'm getting the stats from They came with a combination from the National Ocean. There was one, a study, a very reputable study from the National Library of Medicine. That was a Canadian study that I thought was pretty good, and it was very well sourced. And then the ocean, the National Ocean, says NOAA. I can't remember what that stood for, but
National
Oceanic
and Atmospheric.
Yep. Thank you,
think,
Paul.
Kelly.
Thank you. I was just called the National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration. I just found it. NOAA. Okay. Yep. Thank you. So that's where I'm sourcing this information. But first off, I wanted to kind of talk about what microplastics are, because we hear that term all the time. But the microplastics are defined as plastics that are 0.2 inches. They're less than 0.2 inches large, 2 inches long. And actually, they can break down much, much smaller than that. And in fact, this is something I think I had read somewhere but hadn't really remembered, but there's something called microbeads as well. And microbeads, up until just recently in the United States, and still in when you have products that come from outside of the United States, microbeads are added to a lot of personal care products like shampoos and soaps and even toothpaste and stuff like that. So, and microbeads are these teeny tiny little bits of plastic that are used kind of as fillers inside these products. Apparently in 2015, President Obama signed a law limiting the amount or, saying that you're not allowed to put these things in these products anymore. But a lot of the products that are still coming from outside of the U.S., they still have these things. So anyway, this is a pretty big issue. So the three terms that everybody kind of talks about are microplastics. There's microbeads, which I described, and then macroplastics are anything that are bigger than that. So microplastics basically start as macroplastics. That's anything that's bigger, and it never really breaks down it never goes away. I mean, like they say, 80% of the plastic that's ever been, more than 80% of the plastic that's ever been made is still around. It's just broken down into different sizes of stuff. And a lot of that ends up in, most of it, in fact, ends up in the oceans or into our water supplies. The problem is that, they break down so small that this was kind of funny. And yes, the juvenile part of me laughed a little bit, but it says resin pellets, which are raw materials used in the process of manufacturing plastic, also contribute to the overall amount of existing microplastics. Pellet loss during the manufacturing process can introduce these particles into natural environments where they cause a range of adverse outcomes. These pellets are commonly called nurdles, which, yes, I chuckled like a little seventh grader when I heard that. Nurdles are sources of E. coli. Yep, that's consistent with what I call nurdles, and pathogenic Vibrio bacteria on 5 public bathing beaches included in a recent study. Microplastics aren't only coming from the plastics, the single-use containers that we use. There's also a lot of clothing that we use. A lot of that gets directly into the water supply, because when you are washing something like nylon, spandex, acetate, polyester, acrylic, rayon, all those pieces of clothing made out of those kinds of things, fibers get into the water supply and they get back in, they go down and through the drain if it's city, and not all of them get taken out. In fact, there's the tests that they've done, even on tap water, have, pretty much all the tap water that's out there has levels of microplastic in it. Now, that's not all because of the degradation, of plastics that we throw away or go into the landfills or the oceans or, into the ground. It's also, that's one of the things the Consumers Reports article talked about, is that microplastics are common. I mean, anytime you store food, you heat food up in a microwave in a plastic container, just stop for a minute and think about all the plastic that we use. It would be hard to imagine a world without plastic. We use it for so much, so it's constantly touching our food and and our you know, our clothing and our drinking water and our even our filters. I mean, they are made out of plastics. You know, it's but they don't dissolve easily. They do tend to carry bacteria. They do break down and sometimes release chemicals like pesticides and dioxins as they break down. They can affect organism behavior. They can contaminate groundwater, pollute food sources. They definitely have an impact on marine life. As we eat the, I mean, that's where there's been just a ton of studies about that, where it has an impact on fish and the development of fish. And certainly if we're eating a lot of seafood or a lot of fish or shellfish or those types of things, it gets into, it can transfer into us that way as well. There haven't been, I mean, even though these things have been around, we've kind of known it, there haven't been a ton of studies on the impact on human development. Most of the studies have been on aquatic life, on sea life, because that's where the microplastics seem to be the most prevalent. In fact, you know, going back to that loggerhead research study that they did, they said that 100% of the turtles that had washed back up on shore, the deceased turtles that had washed back up on shore, had plastic consumption. And most of them showed signs of malnutrition because the plastic that baby loggerhead turtles eat, or what baby loggerhead turtles eat, is plankton. And microplastics break down into plankton-sized bits. So these turtles think that they're eating plankton, they're full, and they a lot of them are dying because of malnutrition. Even if they do survive into adolescence, they eat adolescent and adult turtles eat jellyfish. And if you're a baby turtle and you're down under the ocean and you see a Walmart bag floating on top of the ocean, and you know, from underneath, that's likely going to look like a jellyfish floating up there. And so they go up there, they gobble up the Walmart bag, and you know, a lot of them are choking to death, you know, because of because they're swallowing these bags of you know. And so, you know, even it's not just the microplastics, it's all the plastic that we're throwing in. In 2016, there was a lab study from the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology and the University and Hainan University showed that plastic contaminants transfer up to 12.5 of their chemicals to the fish that eat them. They studied cod. There were shellfish. That was a lot of stuff. I'm going to put these links in the topic when I upload this. So if you guys want to see the links, they're pretty long. There's just a lot of information in here. So you know, one obvious way that humans ingest microplastics, as I said, is through eating the marine animals that have consumed the material. If you don't eat seafood, you can still come into contact with microplastics through the drinking water or even just the air. I mean, they're small enough that these things are in rainwater. You know, they've found microplastics even in precipitation. So, you know, cars and trucks release microplastics through tires and by stirring up the dust on the road. Bottled water, one study recently found that bottled water contained twice as many microplastics as tap water. That makes sense, and especially when bottled water has sat for a long time, or when if you put bottled water in the sun or it's been left out in the car, then the sunlight, the UV rays break down and degrade that plastic water bottle, those plastic water bottles, and they're more likely to go into the bottled water supply. So that is one of the concerns. Look, I mean, you know, there's so many. I always talk about this when I'm talking about bottled water. I always make it a point to say that I am not anti-bottled water. Okay, in general, as a rule, I think the bottled water industry is a very, very important part of the water treatment industry. And when you think about, you know, the natural disasters that we had, the hurricanes and the floods and tornadoes and things that come through, if we don't have a solid bottled water infrastructure in place, those people are screwed, you know, because you just can't get the type of filtration we need that quickly to those people fast enough. So you've got to have a solid bottled water infrastructure in place, I think, out there. I do think, though, that we have a responsibility to sort of reduce all of that stuff. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But and when we're talking to people, you know, when they're just grabbing bottled water and using it for cooking and drinking, and they're using it every day, and they're not using the, you know, the refillable stainless steel bottles and those types of things, you don't know how long that those cases of water have sat, and whether or not they were stored in the sunlight or in a warehouse where there was light, or, you know, how long. I mean, that's one of the things, right, is we don't know what the history is of those plastic bottles. Now, most of the bottled water companies out there have reduced the thickness of the plastic. You know, they don't have to be nearly as plastic. They've taken out the BPEs out of the plastic, right? The BPA, out of the plastic. They've made them less likely to leak those chemicals in. But, you know, so they have come a long way in the production of bottled water, but it's still kind of a problem. The other study that I wanted to kind of just point out here before I talk about how our industry has an impact on it and to open it up to discussion is this one that came that I found from the National Library of Medicine. And in a nutshell, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but in a nutshell, they studied three different types of point-of-use filters to look at whether or not these filters would reduce plastic. And essentially what it came down to is what we would expect. Even a carbon filter like a pour-through pitcher or something like that is going to significantly reduce the amount of microplastics in the water. But filters or point-of-use devices with membrane technology, whether that's ultrafiltration or especially reverse osmosis, is going to take out the best. So it's going to it gives you, you know, a 94 to 100% reduction in the detection of microplastics, and if you have membrane technology. So essentially what I saw this study show is that the technologies that we would all suggest for reduction of contaminants is what's going to work, right? And so that's what's going to work. So and again, I'll put the link to that up in the description of this as well. Now, the other thing I kind of wanted to talk about is the responsibility we have in the industry. So there's a couple other stats that I found, and as I was researching this, as far as single-use plastics. Now, when I talk about single-use plastics, everybody thinks about plastic water bottles. Okay, but it's not just plastic water bottles. These are our soaps and detergents and anything that you're not refilling. It's a plastic container that you're not refilling. And in fact, I think that's something that often gets missed when we in our industry are out there talking about it, because like I said, we think about plastic water bottles, but that's not what it is. That's not what they are. Okay, so a Tide container is a single-use plastic container. We in this country use more oil and energy to manufacture, recycle, and transport our plastics than we do in our cars. And so it's not just a matter of the microplastics, although that's certainly a huge deal. It's also the amount of energy consumption that we use. It's, you know, if somebody's really concerned about that, getting off of foreign oil and being energy independent and that type of thing, reducing the amount of plastics that we use in this country, it will help with that. As far as plastic water bottles itself, I've read several studies and it's hard to come up with one, but the smallest amount that I saw from reputable sources was a lot of the stats on these bottled water industry things come from places like I'm looking at one here, earthday.org. And you have to imagine, they source their stuff. It's hard to find the exact, you know, to really find exactly how many plastic water bottles we use. But the studies that I saw said anywhere from 50 billion to 80 billion plastic water bottles a day that Americans use in this country. That's just in water bottles. That's not even in the single-use plastics that we use on a daily basis. But they and only about 10% at most of the plastic single-use bottles that we use go to recycling. It's just not cost-effective. It costs three times as much to make or to recycle a plastic bottle than it does to recycle to make it. It takes three times more money and energy to recycle a plastic bottle than it does to make a new plastic bottle. So it's just not cost-effective for these companies out there to recycle. So there are certain organizations, but a lot of the plastics end up, even when you think that you're recycling, it's still ending up in a landfill or an ocean. It's just out of sight, out of mind. And that we could do a whole, like, hours on that topic alone, on the history of plastic and how that works, and delve into that. It's some scary stuff when you really look at how, you know, delve into the recycling companies and what they're doing. And some of them are actually truly recycling, but a lot of them aren't. And it's not all because they can. It's because we don't separate our plastics. We throw in stuff that can't be recycled, and it's hard to separate that stuff out. It just doesn't become cost effective. But that stuff, and if you want to understand the impact and how the stuff gets into the ocean, Google sometime, if you haven't already or not aware of it, the Pacific Garbage Patch. This is a swirling vortex of plastic in the Pacific Ocean, three times the size of Texas, that goes from the surface all the way down to the bottom. And it's even creating such a problem that ships are having to reroute their shipping lanes because they're sucking in the plastic into their intake valves, and it's creating maintenance problems. And so, you know, there are huge issues. And in fact, there are plastic vortexes in every ocean. The Pacific vortex is by far the biggest and the most common, the most well-known out there. But a lot of the plastic that we use ends up going into the oceans. Now, how do we as an industry, this is what I love about this. This is why this topic is so relevant to what we do. Okay, I have never seen an industry that has a greater ability to impact this issue. We're not going to solve it. We don't have anything to do with clothing, or, you know, we can't control all the things, you know, cars and tires and rubber and all that, all the other things that cause microplastics to get into our water supplies. Certainly we can address it at the point of use or even point of entry in some instances, you know, to get rid of those microplastics in our water. We have the technology to do that. But we also have a responsibility when we are out there to talk to our customers and educate them. And you'd think it's on the drinking water side, on the reverse osmosis side, but yeah, I think that's true. We can get them maybe to, I don't think it's realistic that we're going to get people to stop buying bottled water. I think that we like our convenience way too much. And frankly, I'm sitting in a hotel room right now staring at a couple water bottles that I used last night. So it's just so ingrained in our life. I would be disingenuous and hypocritic to say that I don't think we should use any more single-use plastic water bottles or anything like that. That's just not realistic in the way we live these days. But I can reduce it. I don't use them at home. I use, you know, I have the reverse osmosis system, but that's not even the biggest impact that we have. The bigger impact that we in this industry can do is when we install a water softener, when we're in the home and we're talking to our customers. And this is not an arbitrary number. Pick up any dishwasher owner's manual out there and look at how much soap it says to use if you have soft water versus hard water. Every time we install a water softener out there, we have a responsibility on the sales side, on the service and install side. Every time we talk to the customers out there, we need to remind them that if they are treating their water mechanically with a mechanical water softener, they do not have to treat their water chemically, which means that they can use 75% less soap and detergent, 75% less. And again, not an arbitrary number. That's a number that you'll find in any dishwasher owner's manual out there, any of them. 75% less soap and detergent means 75% less plastic to hold the soap. It means 75% less gas to ship the soap. It means 75% less plastic going into our oceans and landfills. So I know this has been a ton of information, and I can't believe how fast this call has gone, but I want to reiterate the importance of our industry in addressing this problem, even if it's a little bit at a time. Okay, we got about 4 minutes left. Thoughts and comments by you guys. And it turned into a 25-minute lecture here by it seems like by me, but I'm interested in your thoughts. Give me your thoughts.
It's Kevin with Reynolds Culligan. I will say that I never thought of this. I never thought of educating my customer to the fact that every time we install a softener, if you're treating your water mechanically, you're using less soap, and it affects how much plastic is out there in the environment. So it's awesome. It's great. I'm going to share it with my team.
Thank you, Kevin. That's I'm two for two on that one, aren't I?
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm getting a big head. Anybody else? Thank you, Kevin. Seriously, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Kelly, that's Paul.
Yes.
I did see a study last week that talked about nanoplastics. You get microplastics, nanoplastics are even smaller. And like
yeah.
you said, it isn't when they say they break down. Usually what that means, like you said, it's just smaller particle size, not truly chemically breaking down, just smaller. And while this study about the nanoplastics, and was talking about the concentration of them in bottled water, to be fair, there was some question about the way they measured it using lasers. And so we're kind of like the jury's still out on whether the concentration is as they found. But they're concerned that at this level they may be able to get into our bloodstream and other parts of the body because they are so small. So if somebody mm-hmm. hears something about that, take it with a grain of salt at this point. But and as Peter Cartwright said now, it's probably 5 or 6 years ago, he gave a talk on microplastics, and at the time he closed by saying, basically, while we haven't linked microplastics to health issues yet, do you really think it's a good idea to be ingesting them?
Yeah.
The answer is
yeah.
no. No. So, but
yeah,
talk.
And I just think it's
Thank
so
you,
cool in, that we are in an industry where we can actually impact that. You know, you always hear, you know, the general public, oh, you know, they always list the things that you can do to help on the microplastic issue. We have the ability in this industry to do so much more than the average person on the way we impact it. You know, so it's awesome that way. Any other thoughts? Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. Anybody else? All right, then. With that, I'd love to say thank you, everybody, as always. I really appreciate you guys taking the time, putting it on the schedule to join here, and I will talk to you guys next week, if not before. So thanks, everybody. Be safe. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
Thanks. Have a great week.